Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Gulfport, Mississippi, and played cornerback for the Detroit Lions from 1967 through 1977. His nickname was the Supernatural, and he once sang backup for Marvin Gaye. He was inducted to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1992 and has been a minister for the last 29 years with his moniker...
Yes, I love you too, brother.
His name? Lem Barney, and we're honored to have him as our guest. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Lem Barney, who was nicknamed the Supernatural by Jerry Greene. Lem, it's an honor to have you.
Jack, thank you so very much for having me on your show. Anything Is Possible. I know it is now since I'm on your show.
Can you start by telling us about your childhood and your parents?
Well, my childhood, I think I had a wonderful experience as a young man growing up in Gulfport, Mississippi. It wasn't much as the northern sector of Mississippi was. There was a lot of hatred, a lot of killings during those years. I was born in 1945, so it wasn't that easy being an African American in Gulfport, Mississippi during those years. But I think what helped to make Gulfport more of a palatable city was the fact of the military that was there. Keesler Field Air Force Base, which was the fifth largest Air Force base in the country, along with the Navy base and the CBs, was around the territorials of the Gulf Coast itself. So the interracial wasn't as bad as it was, as I mentioned, in northern Mississippi. But, I mean, it was still some overtures there about racial overtures. But growing up in a household with two of the most wonderful parents in the world, and Burdell and Lem, it made it much easier. The principles of the Bible was a daily instructions, living together, loving one another, and sharing with one another. And it at my household on Sunday mornings, Jack, church was not an option. It wasn't a multiple choice. It was, you're going to church. If you can get up and eat, you're going to go to church. That was my dad's philosophy. If you eat in my house on Sunday morning, you're going to church. And mother's philosophy was, if you kids can go out to the teenage centers and dance to smoke-filled rooms 3 and 4 hours, you can certainly give the Lord an hour of your time on Sunday. That was more embraceable. But it was great. I grew up in a household with three sisters. I'm an only boy. But it was great. It helped me to learn about femininity. I can cook. I can clean. I can sew. I can wash. I can braid hair. I can do nails. I can scratch hair. There's no thing I can't do as a male. I'm quite domesticated. But it was all through the guys and the trainings and the teachings of Burdell and Lem.
Jackie says you don't do windows, though.
I don't do windows, especially on Wednesdays.
What did your dad do?
Both my mom and my dad were culinary scientists, Jack. I'd like to put it in perspective. They weren't cooks. They weren't caterers. They were culinary scientists. They could prepare a meal for 350 with a half an hour notice. They end up having their own catering operation during their last part of their lives. But mom and dad worked as a tandem. It was always a team, concerted effort. They worked very well together, and they were the finest that I could. I mean, Chef Emerald have nothing on Burdell and Lem, and I mean that, not taking anything from Chef Emerald, but mom and dad always, bam, kicked it up another notch. They really did. And mom was quite a celebrity in her own right. She was the first Barney to get in the papers. She had all kind of special meals, jambalaya, crayfish pies, and things of that nature that was always being forefronted in the magazines and in the newspapers around Gulfport. But they were great, great people. They were love people. They talk love, and they exuded love, and they trained us in love. And so as a result, one of my favorite words all day long is, "Hey, man, I love you." So that's where that came from. I'd like to find the guy who created Barney, the purple dinosaur, and get something from it, because, you know, Barney sings my moniker. I love you, you love me. But, I mean, I think it's great. And the fact of the matter is, Jack, everybody needs love, and I learned that from Bert Ellen Lim. We could wake up some mornings, and it would be three or four strange people around our breakfast table. And then after they would leave, they'd have a nice breakfast. Mom would feed them coffees and juices and things. And when they would leave, say, "Mom, who was that?" I said, "We don't know. We just saw them outside and thought they wanted a nice breakfast." So it was about extending to others. And you don't have to know people to share your love with them. And these were great lessons that was trained to us by Bert Ellen Lim.
What sports did you play in school?
Well, in high school, grade school, first of all, I had the occasion to play basketball and run track. Football was nowhere in the picture. Being an only boy, Bert Ellen want me playing football at all. I played in the marching band, and I sang in the glee club and in the choir. And it wasn't until my sophomore year in high school where I was discovered by the head football coach who was instructing me in physical education as a quarterback, and wanted to know if I would come out because they was giving out uniforms in a couple of months. And I told him I couldn't play. And he said, "Well, just think about it, you know, and I'd love to have you come out because you certainly got skills, to talent and potentials." And so I go home and I tell my dad, I say, "Dad, guess what the coach told me?" He said, "What did the coach tell you?" It was like he was a little offended. I said, "No, Dad, he told me I had potential." And my dad said, "Potentials for what?" I said, "Maybe to play football, Dad. Can I play?" He said, "Yes, you can play, but check with your mama." So I didn't even ask Mom because I knew what the verdict was going to be.
How did that eventually change?
Well, it changed because two months later, when he had asked me to come by and get a uniform, I told him I wasn't going to be able to play because my parents didn't want me. So he asked me if he could come by the house. Did he think by him coming by, talking with them, it would do any good? I said, "Well, you certainly got the liberty to, and so let's set up the meeting." So the meeting was set. He came by, and Mom's jaws was rock solid. She wasn't going to bite, and my dad was a little more receptive. So it boiled down after about an hour and a half of conversation that coach finally said, "Mrs. Barney, you know, your son can win a scholarship to go to college to take some of the burden off you and your husband." She said, "My son's going to win a scholarship either in the band or either in music. I'm not worried about that." So she says, "Well, you know, I would do anything if you allowed your son to play ball." So she said, "Anything?" He said, "Well, almost anything." She says, "No, you said anything." He said, "Okay, what would it take for me to have your son come out for football, Mrs. Barney?" She says, "I'll allow my son to play football if you will allow him to play in the band at halftime." Coach scratched his head and thought about it, pondered the question, and says, "You got a deal." So my first 2 years playing football, I was the only guy that you could differentiate on the field at halftime because I played in my uniform, my football uniform, and played drums.
Maybe that's what we have to change with the Lions. Maybe we got to get some of them.
Get some drummers.
I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Lem Barney, who intercepted 26 passes in 3 seasons at Little Jackson State. And he was drafted in 1967 by the Detroit Lions in the second round. Lem, can you tell us about buying a new car, coming up from Mississippi in July of 67 for the first training camp?
Well, as you mentioned, the April draft had just been held right before tax day. I could remember it like it was this morning. And it was really the beginning of a dream coming true, because after I started playing ball, I wanted to be not only the a professional football player, but the very best professional football player I could. And after the training in high school and then winning a scholarship to Jackson State University, where I graduated in 4 years, drafted by the Lions in the April draft of 1967 in the second round. I was the 34th player picked in the draft, and I'd had some great guys to come down and talk to me who were great ball players themselves in the National Football League. First, it was the late Emil Tunnell from the New York Giants and the great late Night Train Lane from the Detroit Lions. And I had R.C. Owens as well as Joe DeJet Perry to scout me during those years while at Jackson State during my playing tenure. And they told me, said, Lim, with the skills, the talents, and the ability, your footwork, your speed and quickness, your nose for the ball, the only reason you won't be a number oneer is because you're at a tiny school. You're at a small school, Division II. And it didn't bother me whether I'd have been drafted first, second, or tenth. All I wanted was the opportunity to show the skills and the talent that I'd learned to believe and trust in. And then after being drafted, I came up in April and signed at a press conference with the great Mel Farr from UCLA. Mel was number one that year from UCLA, and I was number two from Jackson State. And remember, again, like it was this morning, we had the press conference over at the Trumbull Holiday Inn. Elliot Trumbull was there, the late, great Lyle Smith, a great writer and PR man with the Detroit Lions. And so I go back to Jackson State after signing and bought a brand new T-Bird, a four-door Landau with the suicide doors. And once I got to Jackson State, had it all souped up, put some earphones in it. And that's what bothered me, not bothered me, but entertained me when I was driving back up for training camp in July. But after going back to Jackson State, graduated, mom and dad was proud. It was a dream about to unfold to be true. And so driving up from Mississippi through Chicago, then all the way up 94 West to get into Detroit. When I got to Detroit, I had earphones on. I wasn't listening to any periodicals, no radio reports, anything. I was listening to Lou Rawls, Hugh Masekela, folk of that nature, because they were hot at the time. And the only instructions I had was to report to 1401 Michigan Avenue, right down from Trumbull, where the Lions headquarters were, across from Tiger Stadium. So as I get there, and I get off 94 and come down Trumbull, I see smoke everywhere, I hear fire, I hear guns going off, tanks rolling up and down the street. And then when I get over to 1401 Michigan Avenue, was a sign on the door that says, all Lion personnel report to 520 Long Pine Road. I'm out of the box because I don't know anything about Long Pine Road. So I asked a cab driver, and he paratraded me back down Lodge through Lasser on into Long Pine, and that's where I checked in there. But it was the third day of the ride. That's why all of the noise and everything was going off.
Did you ever think about turning back and going back to Mississippi?
No, not at all, Jack. I was here looking for a job. I was here looking for a position. And after finding out there was some turmoil going on, I then turned on the radio and started listening, and it was talking about how the National Guards was in and were rioting and looting and things of that nature were going on. And this was the Detroit riot. But it was the upheaval that had started out in Watts a couple of years earlier. The Watts riot, then the New Jersey riot, then the Detroit riot. But before the Newark and Detroit riot, we had a riot on the campus of Jackson State University. It was heat everywhere, Jack. It was doing the movement. Freedom riders and things of that nature, boycotting, you couldn't eat in cafeterias, the brothers couldn't eat at cafeterias downtown. Freedom rider movement. We had one of the great ladies from here who was a great patriot, Viola Liuzzo, who was killed down in Mississippi, along with two other brothers who were freedom riders trying to bring peace. Now, as a result from that, we had one guy to die on our campus at Jackson State University because of an upheaval. The next college, it was four dead in Ohio.
Kent State.
Kent State, yes. Absolutely. So there was upheaval and unrest, civil unrest around the country. Vietnam was big as well.
A couple months later, you have your first regular season game against the Super Bowl champion Green Bay Packers. How did you start?
Well, it was quite an auspicious start, Jack, merely because the fact of the matter, Green Bay Packers in high school and college were my favorite team. They were favorite for me because of the great Bart Starr. Bart Starr played at Alabama, and Alabama and Mississippi are neighboring states. Bart was also not only a great quarterback, but Bart was a defensive back as well. And I patterned a lot of my style after Bart. I played quarterback in high school and was drafted to Jackson State to play quarterback. And the Packers now have just come off the very first Super Bowl victory against Kansas City. And now I find myself in the same division with my favorite team. And as we go out to the center of the field to flip the coin, Green Bay wins the toss, elects to receive, and Wayne Walker, who was our place kicker and field goal kicker and outside linebacker, kicks the ball deep. The ball is down in the end zone. They bring the ball out to the 20-yard line. It's first and 10. Star reverse pivots, gives it into the middle to Elijah Pitts for 3 yards. Now it's second and 7 to the wide side of the field to the rookie from Jackson State. Star, along with both Coach Lombardi, loved to test and pick on rookies. So he tried to throw a quick out to All-Pro Boyd Dowler. And as he saw me closing, he was releasing the ball. So like a good fastball pitcher to a good fastball hitter, he tries to throw it low and away. And he did. But I dove out. It stretched out, intercepted the ball, did a forward shoulder roll, got up and ran it into the end zone for 25 yards. And as I slammed the ball and watched it go skyward, I put my hands on the hips and say, "Lord, this is going to be easy."
Well, you did that 56 times in your career, 56 interceptions. 10 in the first year.
Yes.
So when we come back, we'll talk to Lem about more of his career experiences. I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Crisula.
I once asked former Hall of Fame linebacker Joe Schmidt who was the greatest athlete he ever saw. And without missing a beat, he said Lem Marnie. Lem, who was the best football player you ever saw?
Best football player I ever saw, I only played a total of 7 years. And I think in the 7 years he played, he may have played 70 games. And it's Gale Sayers from the Chicago Bears, called the Kansas Comet. My first game against Gale, and we're both of the same fraternity, Kappa Alpha Psi. I chased him down and I put the handshake on him. And he bumped me upside the helmet and said, "Good tackle." But Gale was a tremendous athlete, a fine football player, great track and fields man. Gale, along with another young man by the name of Cecil Turner, they led the league each year for the 5 years I can remember on kickoff and punt returns. Cecil was so fast, we didn't call him Cecil Turner, we called him Cecil Burner. And Gale, with his moves, his elusiveness, in the open field trying to tackle Gale Sayers one-on-one, you would much rather confront Freddy Krueger on a one-way street. Gale was just a nightmare. Just a strong, fast. He could get into moves and out of moves without losing any timing or any speed whatsoever. Just a tremendous ball player. You could flank him out. He could run the ball from the backfield, and his punt and kickoff returns were just flawless.
Speaking of elusiveness, you wore number 20. Then Billy Sims wore number 20. And then the Lions asked you to present jersey number 20 to a new rookie. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Well, on the offset, my rookie year in 67, when I came in, Jack, I had worn 26 for 3 years at Jackson State University in honor of a gentleman that I had a lot of respect for that played with the Green Bay Packers, Michigan State grad Herb Adderley, who wore 26 for Green Bay. And when I came in, I asked the head equipment manager, Roy Macklin, the late Roy Macklin, if I could have 26. "Oh, no, you can't have 26. 26 is retired. Here, wear this one." So he truculently threw number 20 at me. So I held it up and looked, 2-0. I said, "Well, I'll put some fire into this." He said, "Well, go ahead. You're not getting 26. So as a result, I wore 20 proudly, and it was a lot of scuttlebutt after I retired that Jerry Green, the late, great Joe Falls, and some of the other great media writers were trying to get the Lions to retire the number for me, but they didn't. And it didn't bother me at all, Jack. It really didn't. And then a number of years later after I retired, a couple of years later after I retired, number one draft choice came out of Oklahoma, Heisman Trophy. Billy Sims came in, who wore 20 in college. So they gave Billy number 20. Billy did the number proudly. I would really surmise, seriously, that had Billy not lost his career, or he was lost to the career because of a dreadful knee injury, I think maybe 320s would be in the Hall of Fame from the Detroit Lions. Now, when Billy retired because of the injury, he was forced to retire. A number of years later, Barry Sanders came in. Fonts asked me, would I be gracious enough to present the jersey to him at a press conference out at the Silverdome? I said, I would have no greater joy than to give it to Barry, because I knew about Barry, seen Barry on some college games, and just a tremendous ball player. And so after we had made the presentation and the media and everything had their spiel, we're walking back to the dressing room underneath the tunnel. And before we can get to the tunnel, Barry starts slowing down. And I'm wondering, why is he slowing down? So he finally makes me stop. And he said, "Mr. Barney, I want you to know I'm not worthy to wear this jersey." And when I looked at him, I looked down at his feet, and I said, "Man, with what you have in your shoes, you certainly are." And did he do the number proud? The number 20 gained a little over 27,000 yards in it, with me having just 4,300. Mm. Billy had a little over 6, and then Barry had the rest 15-plus.
I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Lem Barney, Hall of Fame, Detroit Lion. It's 1971, Monday Night Football just starts, and you're playing the Bears. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, it was a time of excitement. We had... Great season, 10-4, coming off my only playoff in Lions, in my history with the Detroit Lions. I think Joe Schmidt, along with his offensive and defensive coordinator and the rest of the coaches, we were in a good scenario. And it was Howard Cosell, the great Howard Cosell. And Harry was always a person that... If you didn't, it's one of two things with Howard. It's not going to be a middle with Howard. You're either going to love Howard or hate Howard. But Howard had a tremendous mind. He had a great retention. He had eidetic imagery, meaning that he could go back many years by seeing a play unfold right today, and he could take it back to 40 or 50 years when he first saw this kind of play happen. And Howard was just a tremendous personality. I refer to him now as the late, great Howard Cosell. In fact, during his last number of months before he went to glory was my year of 92, when I was being enshrined in football, Hall of Fame. And because of the great things that Howard had said about me over the years, I called him at his home in New York and offered to bring him down for my enshrinement ceremonies. But he said he was a little... too under the weather and couldn't make it, but he gave me great gratitude and praise for offering that to do that.
Recently, you went with our own Mitch Albom back to your hometown in Gulfport, which was devastated by Katrina, and a few other local media personnel. What was that like?
Well, Jack, to really be sincere, I had been in a few hurricanes before coming to Detroit, and had seen destruction, had seen some people run out of their homes because of the devastation of various hurricanes that came down and visit that mighty Gulf Coast, the Golden Gulf Coast, as we like to refer to it as. But never before in hurricane history had we seen anything like Katrina. I know the TV and the media, it's sharp, it's pretty conclusive, but it could not give you the icon of what it was really like until you had to be there yourself. I mean, it has to be an eyewitness of your own to see the real devastation. It was a joy for me to have been able to visit along with the Pistons on round ball one and their personnel, who had asked me because they knew I was from Gulfport, along with Ron Dupree, who's from Biloxi. And Biloxi and Gulfport and geographics is like Highland Park from Detroit, 8 miles apart right down the coastline, as well as Bobby Shears, who's a Detroit Shocker. And some of the Red Cross and Salvation Army personnel accompanied us on the trip. But to get there and to see it, and not like in camera shots, you'll see a small portion, but to be there visually and physically, it's like communities are wiped out. It's almost to the parody of watching MASH all over again with Alan Alda, or Vietnam, where missiles and bombs were dropped. You've got trailer trucks, you've got boats, you've got large vehicles that where large vehicles and boats should not be, on top of apartment buildings and on top of homes. The devastation of Katrina, I think they're still trying to estimate it. What I tried to surmise when I got there and saw it firsthand, Jack, was that a lot of the meteorologists said when it turned into Gulfport and Biloxi off the coast, it may have been at a Category 1 or 2. But for the destruction in which it caused compared to Camille in the late 60s, that was at 210 miles an hour, and Katrina at like 175, Camille didn't do a quarter of what Katrina caused. I mean, it was like devastation blocks and miles and for cities upon cities and all down that Gulf Coast. It was just mind-boggling.
For the last 29 years, you've been a minister.
Yes.
Most recently at Hope United Methodist Church in Southfield.
Yes.
Lem, why does God allow bad weather?
You know, it's ironic you asked that question, Jack. When I was coming back the day that Katrina hit the Gulf Coast, I read a psalm and a proverb every day. That's the start of my day after I finish praying. And that day I was reading Psalms 29. And the 29th psalm talks about the voice of the Lord are on the waters. It's you have to really accept it. It's his sovereign will. It's for reasons. It's not always to destroy and to kill, but it's his sovereignty that he allows to happen, and his will shall be done. We look at what happened in New Orleans. It was called a city of hoodoo and voodoo, but the Lord allowed them to let them know he could really do. And I think it's a message that's been sent, Jack. Again, the people that were destroyed, some of the homes that were devastated, I don't think God always wants that to happen, but when his will is done, whatever's in the will be a part of it.
Being a minister, you need tremendous patience. If you try to tell somebody something when they're not ready to hear it, it's feeble. Where do you get the patience to stay in ministry?
Well, it's something I think, Jack, that I ran from for a few years before I accepted going into the ministry and really embraced going into the ministry. I was almost like a Jonah when the Lord told him to go down to Nineveh and carry a message. And Jonah got on a ship, a steam liner, trying to head to the Caribbean somewhere, and was ended up in the belly of the whale. But after being in the ministry for 29 years, it's a joy. It's a true love for me. I try and exercise it every day. And showing my faith, sharing the word of the Lord with as many people as I can. And you talk about patience. Burdell, my mom, she taught me the real definition of patience. She says, patience is a virtue worth waiting for. So you can't garnish patience overnight. It's a process. It's like faith, Jack. You can't go to Nordstrom's or go to Marshall Fields and say, give me $250 worth of faith. You can't buy faith. These are things, these two virtues, patience and faith, are things that are garnished over a long period through trials and through tribulations and through temptations as well, through hard times as well as in good times. But you have to have faith in order to please Almighty God.
We're talking to Lem Barney. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760
WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Lem Barney. Lem, who are your heroes?
Well, Jack, for all of my life, as long as they were here, and there's a whole lot of influence on my heroes and my role models and my mentors, even though they're gone to glory. But Bert L. and Lem were my heroes, Jack. I had a tremendous love and still have a love and a great adoration and admiration for my mom and dad. They were my first instructors. They were my first loves. They trained us in discipline and in love. And, Dad was a Dad was a strict disciplinarian, but he loved you in whipping you. And I used to say, Dad, don't whip me so hard. He said, I love you this much, so I must do it this way. And Mom was a disciplinarian in taking away privileges, saving money up to go on scouting trips and things of that nature. And if you acted up, if you did something contrary to her wishes and her commands, she wouldn't whip you, but she would take those privileges away, even though you'd paid the money for it. But Bert L. and Lem, by no question, were my role models, my heroes, and my mentors. Much love for my mom and dad. And I think if every young man and every young woman could make that same assertion that their moms and dads are and were their heroes, we'd live in a much more peaceful and serene and temporal world.
We live in a culture of violence and death. The reality TV, the movies, the two political parties, the hatred, the rap music. Can we reverse this trend and how?
Yeah, I think all things that are bad can be reversible, and they should be reversible before it's too late. I think we're doing, as you mentioned, the violence, the killing. We're destroying ourselves. But I think if we start loving ourselves more as much as we hate each other, I think we'd have a much more temporal world to live in as well, Jack. The greatest thing about life is love, and the greatest time to love is now. Unfortunately, a lot of children, because a lot of parents didn't grow up in love. So if a parent doesn't grow up in love, how can he instruct or how can she instruct their siblings to grow up in love? It's about what you grow up with, Jack, the influences that, as I mentioned, Bert L. and Lem having on myself and my three sisters. It was about love. We had family prayer in the morning. We had family prayer at night. There was blessings and prayers from each person that sat around the table before dinner. So these things will help you to garnish and embrace love, and you could really know the meaning of love, and then we would all share love much more receptively.
You're 60 years old.
Don't tell everybody, Jack.
You weigh the same that you weighed when you played. You're in phenomenal shape. What's your daily morning routine?
Jack, my daily morning routine, as I shared with you before, it's a joy for me to get up in the morning. I get up in the morning. I've got a great attitude. I've got a great zeal for life. And I can't wait to get up some mornings, particularly during the winter months. If I turn over and I look at the clock and it's like about 4 o'clock, it means I got another hour and a half to sleep. I'm a little ticked off, but some mornings I'll get up anyway, because my basic principles every morning, my first order of the day is through worship. I'll go to my library and I'm going to sing as 5 songs every morning to the Lord, and that's my praise. That's my first order of praise. And then I'm going to pray for about 35 or 40 minutes. I've gone upward of hours and a half before. I mean, I don't try to look at a clock, but, you know, I know the time that I spend with him, and it's an enjoyable time. It's allowing him to know that how much I love him and my worship hour in prayer. And then after praying, I'm going to read his word, as I shared with you earlier, that I'm going to read a psalm and a proverb every day. And then after that, I read more scripture. I'm going to spend about an hour reading in the morning of his word. Then after I've prayed to him, after I've read to hear what he wants to say to me, I'm going to go work the temple out. And I came across this verse, even though I've read it many times over the years, about 6 years ago, Romans 12:1. It says, I urge you, in view of God's mercy, that you offer your bodies living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to the Lord. This is your spiritual act of worship. Now, even though I've enjoyed working out all my life, I mean, it was what helped me to be the athlete in high school and college and with the Lions and my after career, I've worked out as diligently as I did when I was an active ball player. But when I read that and the revelation that I got, this is your spiritual act of worship, boy, I shouted for joy. I said, I'm on the right page, man, because I'm working the temple out. It's the temple that houses the Holy Spirit. So I'm going to work out. I've got a routine, Jack, I've been doing now for about 18 years. I do cross training. I dance. I do 20 minutes, my warm-up, 20 minutes of metric aerobics. And I dance with 5 pounds in each hand and 5 pounds on each ankle. Then I'm going to walk the treadmill for 20 minutes with the 5 pounds on each ankle. Then I'm going to do 30 minutes of extreme two bow flex. And I'm pretty bloody after about an hour and 10 minutes down in my rec room. But it's a joy.
On the way down here, I'm driving down Woodward, and around 8 Mile, I see a church sign. And it said, God answers knee mail.
That's right. That's right.
K-N-E-E.
Not email. Yeah. Not email, but knee mail. Absolutely.
In another 4 or 5 months, Super Bowl 40 comes to town. If Paul Tagliabue, NFL commissioner, came to you and said, Lem, in honor of it being in your city, I'll give you 1 minute to talk to the world, what would your message be in 1 minute?
Well, that's a pretty stiff question. I'm going to try to answer that for you, too. I know Detroit has had some black eyes over the years because of what has occurred in this great city. The 67-68, when the Tigers won, we had some fires. The Pistons, the Red Wings. Now, if the Lions could ever win a Super Bowl, it wouldn't be any burning, Jack. They would move the lakes around. Lake Michigan would be over here in Lake Superior. but I would say particularly to Detroiters and to the world, when we're so elated about our great teams, let us not cause the destruction and havoc that has been going on over the years. Let's show more peace and more love and more respect and adoration for our great cities, because it's the small man that really loses when cities are torn down and burned down. It's not the people that's got the monies. It's the people that's still striving, still working, trying to get money that it's more destructive of.
What are your dreams?
My dream is to live out the life that the Lord has given me, Jack. Again, as you just mentioned, I'm 60 years old now, and it's a joy. Had I known it was going to be this great getting to 60, I'd have gotten here earlier, but I'd had to wait. Now, I don't celebrate the 60 I just had. I'm celebrating the 60 that's yet to come. I think I could get to another 60. But to reach as many people as I can, to touch as many people as I can, and to say to many people as I can that I love them and the Lord loves them too, and he wants them to be his great sheep of his great pasture.
What are you proudest of?
What am I proudest of? I'm proud to have two wonderful children, Lem III, who's 36 years old now. He's an elementary educator in the Houston public school system. And our daughter, Latrice, she's 31. She's into music. She sings, writes, and arranges music. In fact, she's doing some work now for Will Smith. And to Lem III's union, he has Lem IV, our only grandchild. Lem IV is 11 years old, and he's playing his second year of organized athletics as we speak.
You once sang backup for Marvin Gaye. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, Jack. It was as my wife called it, it was serendipitous for me, because Marvin, when I first got to Detroit, I'd met all of the great Motown artists, the Miracles, the Four Tops, the Temptations, the Supremes, the Marvelettes. And Marvin and I hit it off right away. Marvin was a great spiritual brother. Both his parents, his mom and his dad, were both Baptist ministers. So Marvin and I, we talked the gospel all the time. And after my third year of being with Marv, Marv had three singers: Mary Wells, Tammy Terrell, and Kim Weston. But Tammy Terrell died in his arms on stage from a brain concussion. And Marvin went into a stupor. I helped him bail him out after a year. And so he knew I loved to sing. We'd sit at his baby grand piano and just tinkle and hoo and ha for hours. And finally, he said, come go to the studio with me. I want you to do this. And so as a result, Mel Farr and myself went over to Studio B, and we did What's Going On. And less than a year, we got a call down to Motown and said, come get your gold record.
Lem, I love you, brother.
I love you too, Jack.
Thanks very much for coming on. Our guest next Sunday will be the president of Hungry Howie's, Steve Jackson, who started out delivering pizzas in Garden City. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because anything is possible. Spohon.